Over the years, I have collected a few nativity sets. I'm sure you all have some in your homes that you're fond of. And they're all special to me because they were all presents. But there's one of them in particular that holds a special place in my heart. It was bought by my parents when they were first married, and it's the nativity set that my sisters and I played with when we were children, and perhaps also sometimes fought over. In its day, it looked shiny, new, and perfect. Mary looked serene in her beautiful blue and white robes, not like a woman who was either just about to give birth or just had given birth after having trod through miles of rough terrain on a donkey. And Joseph has his hands braced on his heart with a restful and peaceful look on his face. Again, not like a lot of the new fathers that I've seen. I remember playing for hours as a child, moving the pieces around and imagining full conversations that were being had amongst the Holy Family. And I recall slowly walking the wise men around the living room over mountains of cushions to finally arrive just in time for Epiphany. I lamented that my mother didn't want the baby Jesus in the manger until Christmas Day, because really, Mary and Joseph's expressions made no sense without him. But I was thrilled when Christmas Day arrived and Jesus was in his pile of hay, all shiny and new, with a head full of hair, looking really like a six-month-old, and his arms outstretched like he was about to bellow out a Freddie Mercury song. That manger is over 80 years old now, and it's looking pretty tattered. The painted clay figures are chipped and worn. Joseph is missing a big chunk of paint on his forehead. Mary's clothes are grayed and tarnished, and the donkey only has one ear. Many of the animals were lost over the years and have been replaced by others that came from toy sets or were purchased from thrift shops along the way. And somehow, a holy rooster has appeared on the scene, and it's as large as the sheep. We also no longer have the original baby Jesus. I think he just got played with and loved so much that he got lost in one of the rooms, maybe after a Christmas season. I, for one, remember taking him to bed and hiding him under my pillow, convinced that was the real Jesus. The replacement Jesus is half the size of Mary, about the size of a chicken. But no one in my family seems to notice or care about the tarnished pieces or the discrepancies in scale. In fact, we love the manger more because of its imperfections. It's so much easier for us to relate to the discordance and quirkiness of it than to the perfect manufactured nativity scenes that look more orderly than our lives or homes ever will. In much the same way, Luke's nativity account shows how Jesus came into the world in the context of tattered and chipped lives, not how one might expect the inbreaking of God. And this allows us to ponder God, not in the abstract or as a powerful, royal, or military hero, but as a vulnerable baby born of a poor Hebrew teenage unwed mother and his carpenter father, who are trying to stay sheltered in a town at the outskirts of the occupying Roman Empire, amongst the din and stench of animals. A family that will soon find itself in political exile, hiding for their lives. It calls us to ponder what it means to have God among us, as one of us, in the muck, the sweat, shunned, cold, dark night. This night, Christ is born and brings salvation to all nations. The circumstances of his birth show how God's kingdom is unlike any we have known or imagined. is one of true peace, justice, and mercy. Not just for a few, but for all. Tonight, Isaiah's prophecy is fulfilled. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. For a child has been born to us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. That God comes in the flesh as a baby born in a manger, or if he were born today, maybe under the Rideau Street Bridge, or on a reserve without safe drinking water, or a rooming house, or in any nook or cranny of any town or war-torn nation where people feel abandoned or forgotten, is precisely what is amazing and new. The overturning of what is power and what is glory is highlighted by who God chooses as witnesses. Angels announce Christ's birth to shepherds. Shepherds who would have been regarded as the lowliest of low, dirty, marginalized, and often thought of as bandits. And we're told they're terrified. And the angel tells them, "Do not be afraid. For see, I am bringing you good news of great joy for all the people. To you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Messiah, the Lord." And then the shepherds rush off to see for themselves. And when they get there, they tell everyone about what the angel told them. And everyone is amazed. But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart. No doubt she did. Because what was brought about through the humble beginnings of Mary was truly awesome. As C.S. Lewis wrote, "Once in our world, a stable had something in it that was bigger than the whole world." I would love to know exactly what it was that Mary was pondering in her heart. Surely she was aware that there would be great risks, hardships, and pain ahead of her. She and Joseph had already experienced some of these. And what of the implications of a baby coming into the world to overturn the entire society? A savior who scatters the proud in the imaginations of their hearts, who brings down the powerful from their thrones and lifts up the lowly, who fills the hungry with good things and sends the rich away empty. Those in power don't willingly give up the status quo. In any event, we know that Mary would live out these trials in the coming days in exile in Egypt, on the road with her son during his ministry, at the foot of the cross, at his tomb, and after his resurrection. But for now, she resides in the manger with her newborn, recovering from his delivery and pondering the greatness of what has unfolded and what is to unfold. That God comes to us in the flesh, a babe out of his mother's womb, naked and vulnerable, completely humbled and dependent on others for shelter and food, tells us that we can be vulnerable. Because Jesus looks beyond veneers. And Jesus wants to be in relationship with our true, imperfect selves in our broken world. As the theologian Joe Kay says, it's time we take our place in the blood, sweat, pain, and confusion that would have been the scene of the birth of Jesus. Because that is where we belong. We belong there. Not only because we understand what it's like, but mostly because we're the ones that need to cozy up to the manger to be saved. Saved from thinking our messy lives are somehow not good enough. Saved from our moments of despair, our self-loathing, our inclination to give up. Saved from our pervasive and numbing indifference. Above all, saved from thinking that we don't need to be saved. This is precisely what is joyful, shiny, and new about the story of Christmas. Jesus came into the darkness to be a light to all. And we too are called to be this light by sharing our brokenness and transforming it into helping others, by feeding the hungry, caring for the sick, visiting the lonely and the captives, and doing this without fear, because God is with us. God chose to come among us in the imperfect, chipped, scarred, incomplete, and skewed, scaled mangers of our lives. This is good news. Merry Christmas.